It's 88.5 KCSN with Nick Harcourt, and Jim James has a brand new solo album out today. And last week, I had the good fortune to catch up with Jim and his producer, Blake Mills, in a conversation in front of an audience over at the East West Studios in Hollywood. We're going to come back and catch up with the guys and learn a little bit about this album, but why don't we hear a song from it first up? The new album is called Eternally Even, and this is Same Old Lie.
It's the same old lie they tell you.
Nick Harcourt with you. It's 88.5 KCSN. That's a brand new track from Jim James, frontman of My Morning Jacket. His new album is called Eternally Even, and that's Same Old Lie. So last week, I had the good fortune to host a Q&A with Jim and his producer, Blake Mills, over at the East West Studios in Hollywood, and we talked about the album. I'm going to jump into the conversation with Jim in a moment, but I'm going to set it up for you because the interesting thing about this record is that it came out of some sessions that had been done 5 or 6 years ago with Jim and the drummer from Red Cross, who is also a film composer, Brian Wright Sell, and they'd done this work. It had sort of been shelved because the movie had gone in a different direction, and then here's Jim to pick it up.
The Jacket was on tour over in Europe, and one of the songs came on shuffle on my phone, and I was like, oh man, I really like this. I've always wanted to do something with this, and we made a lot of score, but we also did 30 to 40 minutes just of improv where I was playing the organ and Brian was playing the drums. And it came on, and all of a sudden, like, just all these words and melodies finally came, you know, that were, like, never intended to come. You know, it was just like this total improv, total beautiful, just space out music, and words and melodies started to come. And I started just messing with it and recording and recording voice memos and writing down voice notes and like trying to remember it all. And it was so funny. He sent me an email like, I don't know, a week or two after I'd started working on it. And he's like, hey, we should do something with these organ jams.
You remember that stuff?
It was so weird because I was literally in a Pro Tools session working on it. And I got his email and I was like, wow. So that was the starting point of this. So it kind of felt like a weird surprise from the universe because I hadn't set out to make another solo record. I hadn't like booked a time and like when it went into like making another thing. So it all just kind of happened.
So serendipity. And I guess you had, what was the basis for the album? I mean, you wrote songs after that and you did a number of different recording sessions with some different people, obviously, to fill out the album. But how much of the direction of the album was based in those jams? Is that really, was that the jumping off point for what we just heard?
That was the main crux of it. I would say, I don't know, 60% of the record came from those jams. We recorded like 30 to 40 minutes of improv Blake and I cut and edited into what became a lot of the songs. But then it's funny, the rest of the songs on the record, like the song Here in Spirit, the third song, my friend Eric Johnson, who's from an amazing band called Fruit Bats, he released a really great solo record a couple years ago that I was just really moved by and looped a part of this song and was obsessed with the song for 2 or 3 years and just listened to it all the time, called Minor Miracles. And it's just like a 30-second section in the middle of his song, Minor Miracles, and I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. And I literally, just for 2 or 3 years, listened to it, like the score that we had done 5 or 6 years ago. And then, out of nowhere, just the words and the melodies and the music and everything popped out. And then there's another song, The World's Smiling Now, that is a sample of a Supreme Jubilees track, a really great lost gospel group from the 70s. The song was called It'll All Be Over. And again, that was a song that, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I had taken this loop and I would drive around or walk around listening to this loop over and over and over and over and over again. And then one day, it just all popped out. And that's kind of like the theme of this record, is there was never any intention. Because I've got another Jacket record that I've written, and I'm excited to record. And all those songs are songs that popped into my head, and I wrote, and it's A to D to C to G or whatever. And they'll be recordings, but this was kind of a different thing.
So when did Blake come into the picture? Because you've never really worked with a producer before. Now, you've got a guy here who's done some amazing records in the last couple of years. And I know that you've never made use of a producer before. So first of all, why did you decide now to bring somebody else into your process? And then secondly, this guy.
Well, it was another magic moment. Jamie Serretta, who's been my publisher for 800 years or so, I'm sure many of you know him from Big Deal. He has been instrumental in so many cool turning points in the life of not only My Morning Jacket. I feel like My Morning Jacket is still together because of him, because he encouraged us to hold auditions that led to the band to keep going on. But I played him the record. I had the record, I don't know, let's call it 70% done, and I really liked what I had done with the record. But I felt like, and I think people who work on their own solo records or something would agree, that my head was just too deep into it. I was so buried in it, and I had gone over it over and over again. I didn't know if it was good or bad or whatever, and I played it for him, and he felt the same. He's like, oh, okay, this is good. I like where it's going, but I don't know. And he had just taken, I don't forget what it was for, but he had just taken a meeting with Blake about some other project that he was working on, and he was like, have you considered Blake? And I was like, that's a great idea. Because Blake and I, we don't know each other super well. We had met several times before and hung, and we have many mutual friends. And, of course, I love a lot of the stuff he's done. I was like, that's a great idea. So Blake and I had a meeting, and I played Blake what I had. And, I mean, just right off the bat, I felt like he had so many great ideas and just so many ways to help me focus the lens and sharpen it and get it where I wanted it to go, but I didn't even know, if it could go there or wasn't there or whatever. So, again, it was a really cool, I don't want to call it fortuitous, but it was just a really cool unintended event that Blake had just taken that meeting with Jamie and, just all happened.
So Blake, I don't know what your criteria is for when you decide to work on something. I'm guessing when you're hired as a session player, you go in and work, and as long as you don't hate what you're working on, you'll go in and do the gig. Producing something a little bit different, clearly, because you've got to be committed to a project in a creative way as well. So when you were first approached by Jim, he said you'd met before. Are you a fan of the work that he's done previously? Was that part of why you wanted to get involved, or was it really the opportunity to actually work with a songwriter and see how you could contribute to the songs?
Well, I've had a lot of respect for Jim that predated getting to work with him on this music, but when the time came to meet up and basically just have a listening session much like this, where we set up all these chairs, but I was the only person here, and they blasted me with the music. There was something about the record of that state that was so moving, and there was such a clear essence of Jim and his creative personality in this music. And I knew that if he was in a situation where he was meeting with me in a producerial capacity, that he was probably the most terrifying thing for somebody who's made such a bold artistic statement is letting outsiders into that with the fear that it's going to compromise or water down the artistic experience for other people, before it ever even has a chance to come out. And as someone who has experience making records, and I've been fortunate enough to play with a lot of my favorite musicians, I have a great respect for that, the artist's dilemma in making music, and trying to make it massively appealing for all of the right reasons. And I felt, uniquely qualified to help Jim finish the record in such a way that it never felt like it was compromising any of the Jim in the record, but it just further framed that for people to, to love or hate. We pulled up each song and kind of scrutinized it, I think, tried to decipher what, if anything, needed to be done and what the goal, you know, the end goal of the that piece of music was. And one thing that was kind of nice to see from the outsider's perspective, kind of what you were talking about a minute ago with how deep inside the record you had gotten after working on it for so long, was that there were these lyrics that seemed so immediate and so potent and important, and there was at the same time all this music and this mass of sound, and the puzzle became just how to make those two things coexist, you know, and not sacrifice the people's ability to hear what it is that you're singing about on this record. So that was another way in which it felt like I had a strong opinion about that being the end result, you know, however it needed it.
Yeah, I've got to say that I really, one of the reasons I wanted to work with Blake is because I had heard and knew that you have a strong opinion about things, and I like it when people speak their mind and speak their truth and say what they think. Like, I think X is wrong or Y is right or whatever, and I feel like we really got into a couple, you know, we never fought, there were never like any like bad words spoken or anything, but we, you know, we had our disagreements, and Blake would say, you shouldn't have this much reverb on your vocals or whatever, and I'd be like, what, I really like the reverb so much.
I was going to say, you're telling Jim James to pull the reverb down.
Yeah.
You know, that must have been a fun moment.
I felt uniquely qualified as a fan of reverb myself.
No, but it was funny though, because I felt at the end of the day there was a reason that I wanted to work with you, and you know, looking back on it now, it's like, you know, whatever the reverb juncture or whatever, we came to this turning point.
And did you like set a number? Like, you know, we won't go over 7
wax
No, but I don't know. When I look at it now, I'm glad that I listened to you. Like, I feel like there's like, I'm like, I chose to work with you for a reason. I'm gonna choose, even though it feels uncomfortable in this moment, to listen to you.
It's 88.5 KCSN with Nick Harcourt, and we're listening to a conversation with Jim James and his producer, Blake Mills, recorded last week about the brand new Jim James album that is out today. It's called Eternally Even. We'll get back to our chat in a short while, but let's listen to a song from the new album, one that they were referring to earlier on in the conversation. It's called Here in Spirit. It's KCSN.
The stone is thrown, it's coming fast.
It's 88.5 KCSN with Nick Harcourt, and we're giving up a little bit of time on the morning show to talk about the brand new album from Jim James, Eternally Even, that is out today. The song we just finished up was called Here in Spirit, and I tried to engage Jim a little bit on a favorite track or perhaps a song that represented where he was coming from as he was making the album, and well, he likes them all, so I turned to Blake Mills, his producer, and asked him to talk about the title cut of the album, Eternally Even.
After what feels like a record's worth of messages that are really broad and that are addressed to what feels like a number of people, Eternally Even as a song feels much more personal, much more one-on-one. And it has this message of forgiveness, but it's like a letter in a bottle. You know, like there, it's not a conversation. It's a one-way conversation, and you don't know if that message is getting across. You know, and there's something so human and valuable and pertinent to that feeling of the times. You know, of trying to resist the urge to meet something disgusting with negativity, and that song gets me every time.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the instrumentation on the record.
You mentioned that a lot of the music came about from you and Brian writing for a movie, and there was something very cinematic about the song structure and the tone of it. And it was one of the reasons why I wanted us to work with Greg Kohler, who's worked on a lot of films, and bring in some elements that play into the that cinematic quality, the strings and timpani and a lot of orchestral elements that just try to, again, elevate the sense of, like, this is, it's not like a guy in a garage with his guitar with a message kind of record. It's a larger thing than that.
Anything to add to that?
I mean, most of my stuff I did in a shed up in Montecito Heights here in L.A. at this amazing place I rented where there were two tortoises that lived there, and it was like a Edge of Mars kind of vibe where you're looking at downtown L.A., but you're way, way away from everybody. And, you know, I don't know, not much thought. I didn't put much thought into how I recorded it. I didn't even care. I was just like, let's record it. But I feel like that was one of the reasons I wanted to get with Blake is, like, what else can we do? How else can we try the drums? How else can we try strings? How can we try whatever? You know, Blake did a lot of cool tubular bells and timpani and, you know, obviously guitar and stuff like that, that I felt like there's, you know, it's so funny because we were talking about this the other night, like there's only so many chords in music and there are only so many instruments that exist on the face of the earth. But what makes music special and original is how a person's soul comes through their instrument, you know, so you can hear somebody play the drums like you've never heard the drums played before, you know, it's like, or somebody play the guitar like you've never heard it played before. Are they playing G's and C's and D's? Yes, but you've never heard G's and C's and D's like this before. I mean, it's crazy. Or like when Chris Dave came in to play drums, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, like I've heard the drums played a million times. And I never like to use adjectives better or worse because it's all different. But it's just so cool when you hear somebody new where you're like, oh, like, it's just like, it's a new thing. It's a new instrument. It's like, it's no, all labels are gone.
I always find it interesting, you know, the discussion over analog and digital. You know, I think that a lot of people use both to great effect. And a lot of people will say, yeah, well, I use all the tools that are available to me. But there is nothing like a human being playing their instrument because, as you said, they bring themselves to it. Any highlights of any of those performances? You mentioned the drums. You had strings, as you said. Was there anything else in particular that when you listen back to the record now, you're like, God, I would never have thought of using that?
Well, another cool Jamie Serretta moment was he was working with this woman, Shun Goodzo, and he played me a couple of her demos one day when I went in to his office just to hang out and talk. And I was so struck with her voice and her, just the way that she did things. And then we all went to see Kamasi Washington one night and had dinner together. Yeah, another amazing artist. We had dinner together and and she sang most of the 90% of the female vocals on the record. And I just thought her voice was such a beautiful connecting line that, I don't know, it's just so weird how things happen, again, that you don't plan on them. You know, I was thinking and trying to find somebody to sing on the record, and I know so many wonderful, amazing singers, and just for whatever reason in his office that day, like her voice coming off her demos, I was like, oh my God, this is the voice, and it worked out great.
It's Nick Harcourt with you at 88.5 KCSN, our conversation with Jim James from My Morning Jacket about his brand new album, Eternally Even, as well as the producer of the album, Blake Mills. We're going to wrap things up with one more song from the new release. This is In the Moment.
All in the moment, no hesitating.
It's 88.5 KCSN. That's Jim James and a song called In the Moment. It's from his new album, released today, Eternally Even. And that was a conversation with Jim and his producer, Blake Mills, that we recorded a week or so ago over at the East West Studios in Hollywood. I want to thank everybody at the studio and the engineers who helped out. Michelle for putting it together back here at KCSN, and the folks over at ATO and Capitol Records, and Sharon Lord and Will Botwin at Red Light Management. I'm Nick Harcourt. We're jumping out of here for the day. Have a fabulous weekend. Jim Nelson next.